the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I'm going to pretend I'm a kid for a little while longer. Just a little while longer, guys. I mean, turning 32 means I officially can't claim youth anymore. But for a little while longer, I'm going to pretend like I'm still a kid. I act like it, so I might as well pretend I still am. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. As always, the other two far much wiser, younger, but wiser individuals than I, Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
What's happening? Hey, what heavy metal hair band did you just feature there?
I believe that was Twisted Sister.
Okay. I like it. I was confused. But I'm all about it, Ben. I'm here. And you are old, so thank you for being our elder on the show today. We appreciate that.
And you are old.
And the guy who can mathematically tell you I'm that old, Statman Russ Ivanek.
Yeah, I can't use my fingers and toes to count your age anymore, so I think that is, in fact, the level where you are old.
I would like to point out the other day, both these guys graciously texted, spoke to them yesterday on my birthday. It was a great time. But as I was going through the text, I don't know why, and Russ, if you remember sending this, good on you, because I'll always remember it. I got a text from Russ probably 4 or 5 years ago on my birthday, but it wasn't the usual happy birthday, man, hope it's a great day. I got, happy birthday, buddy. I'm so glad you picked today to be born.
You could have hung out in the womb a little longer.
Like,
I don't know.
Like, I had any control on the situation.
Of course you did. I don't understand. I think Russ is spot on. You were birthed. You came into this place. You picked when to sit down at the table.
I don't trust the math of either of you on this particular one. And I'm going to question it. Big goings here today. We are officially celebrating 3-year anniversary of this show. 3 years ago today, we decided, hey, you know what? Let's start trying to talk on the radio and seeing if anyone wants to listen. If any of you are listening, I'm sure it's been a rough 3 years for you, but we appreciate it. Thank you so much. This has been a great time for us. Without it, Justin would never have realized how salty of an individual he was, but Russ already knew he liked to do math, so we didn't really teach Russ anything there. Before we get into this, because we got to talk about everything, I would like to say to these two, great 3 years. Here's hoping that 3 years from now we're still doing the exact same thing we're doing every Wednesday night.
Hell yeah, man. 3 years from now we'll be on TV, so just mark your calendars. Russ will be talking about Dustin Johnson winning another major on television 3 years from now.
Justin, we don't have the voices for TV. We really don't have the faces, so...
Faces for radio, baby.
There's a reason we don't send this little webcam thing we have going to everyone, because that would be an abuse. People would really, really have a problem with that.
We can start an OnlyFans and send it to people.
Oh, man.
What?
An OnlyFans. It took us 3 years to figure out and start doing Instagram. Maybe back up on the OnlyFans. What's that Instagram handle, by the way?
That's a good question.
I take it back. 3 years, we haven't figured it out.
Oh, my God. Justin, you earned this. You earned this.
If everything you're doing is bad, I want you to know this.
Everything you're doing is bad.
I should have just gone with the obvious. It's Armchair Sports Talk.
There we go. Hit us up.
Wait. How come we got that yet? Russ, why are we at Sports Armchair on Twitter? What happened there?
I don't know. You set up the Twitter account. You tell me.
Oh, that's not... okay, fine. I don't think I was working too hard when I set that one up. That's why I handed it over to Russ, because clearly I was starting out in the wrong place. Lots to talk about this week. We'll get right into it. Lions football. Lions come away with a 30-27 win. I'm going to say this right now, and I don't know that either of you will disagree. I don't feel like we won anything. I feel like we went from having a usual Lions lead going into the second half of the game, and like normal, that defense just showed time and time again that Swiss cheese has a better job of protecting things. A broken condom could do better. It's just that bad. Finishes with a 30-27. But what I did take out of this, guys, and I think, again, I'm assuming you both agree with me because we've seen it. This is now multiple times this year. Late in the game, the defense has failed, and Stafford has to put it on his back and show, listen, all you guys want me out of town, that's fine. The next team that's going to get me is going to get wins, knowing for a fact that I can drive us down the field late and put us in a position to win this. A late touchdown to Hockenson against Atlanta, now a late drive with very little time to get Prater into field goal position, and then Prater hits a knuckleball of a kick. Never seemed to get above the upright, but just barely did for, I believe it was a 59-yard field goal to win it all. Jay?
So stupid.
The words right out of my mouth. I'm not even going to ask a question. Go ahead, Sergeant Salty.
It's stupid. Like, why are we winning? Like, if we're going to win, I would like to win. I don't want it to be the way that they did it. Like, I don't think our defense has put together four consistent quarters of a game. We're getting gashed up the middle. We're making Alex Smith look like a superstar. And I feel like we're going to constantly do that. We're going to let mediocre quarterbacks look great, and the elite ones will just toast us. And, you know, I was impressed with Swift, which I know we'll get to him in a minute, but like Swift was the only bright spot of that game. Our secondary got destroyed against the Washington football team, which we had no business giving up that lead. And then Prater gets to do his best Jason Hansen impression and save the day. And I don't subscribe to that, man. I was mad yet again, second time this year that they win, and I'm pissed.
It's completely fair, Russ. I mean, this is a team that, in my opinion, talent-wise, a 4-5 record is just, it's not right. We should have won more than we've lost. We've given away games. But at the same time, you see that record, and then you see the product on the field, and you go, yeah, that's about right.
Yes. It's funny how it kind of works out that way, right? Like, execution-wise, you would think this team has to be better than this, and somehow they're backing asswards up to the playoff race, somehow, but without really beating anyone of quality convincingly anyways, and tripping over themselves into this win. Look, was that Prater field goal exciting? Yeah. Should you ever bet against Stafford and Prater combination with less than a minute left? No. You should always bet for them, because this is crazy. However, this should piss you off as a Lions fan, because with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, you were up 21 points. Less than 15 minutes later, the game was tied. That is inexcusable, especially against a bad Washington football team. But against any other football team, that's bad. Prater, though, all-time now leader in 59-plus yard field goals, all-time leader in field goals of more than 50 yards as time is expiring, all these obscure stats. But that's like being the garbage man who picked up the most shit. Like, dude, you do your job and you do it great. You should not be put in that position as often as you are. That's a sign of a bad team. And it's damning with damning praise, I guess, here. But hey, Hall looked good. Tyrell Crosby actually shut down Chase Young, and the dirty dancing ballroom move that he pulled with Matt Prater at the end was Hall of Fame worthy on its own. So there's some silver linings, I guess, which besides just Swift.
I really love Chase Young kind of bailed us out late in the game. He couldn't get to Stafford all day, so then he finally just takes a roughing the passer just to get a hit in. And I get that's rookie mistake or a Lions mistake, depending on how you want to look at it, because we do it even with veterans. That just, it's a rookie mistake, doesn't need to happen. I have an interesting, not trivia, but more curious question for you guys. Before I do, I want to ask you both, and I'm asking you to both be on that field in a zebra suit calling this play or calling this game. Did the Lions get off the field? Was that pass interference on Trufant late in the game? Because to me, they got off the field. That's not a pass interference. At that point in the game, you have to eat the whistle. You have to accept it. There was contact on both sides. Lions got off the field. There is no reason for this late game drive. See, I to me, it's definitive. Well, go ahead, Jay. If you've got it, go for it.
I think it's pass interference. Okay. I think at the point where that route was being ran, he was at the pivot point of the route where he was going to cut in and go right. And when you put your hands up on a man's shoulder and you're impeding his ability to cut right, welcome to the NFL. That's a flag. I know it looks chintzy. I know there's bigger atrocities that have happened in terms of penalties, but like, when you get him at the pivot point, in my opinion, you're going to get flagged on that. You're impeding his ability to run his route. So.
The fact that Trufant had his head around and was clearly making a play for the ball as well, you still see it as a flag for the offense, to help the offense.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That's completely fair. Russ, sounds like you're the tiebreaker here.
I'm trying to get video of it because Sunday was exactly 3 years ago. I'm trying to refresh my memory. Right,
while Russ is looking, I want to ask you something because Russ brought up some stats for Prater that are very good. They make him an elite, put him in an elite list of people. Kickers don't get in the Hall of Fame that often. There's very few we're going to see in our lifetime that are going to go into that Hall of Fame. Obviously, Vinatieri right there at the top. I want to ask you guys, because though Prater is great, we have seen a guy who is just as good as Prater, if not better, and I think his name will come up later in this show, Jason Hansen. So I want to ask you guys, which Lion kicker, number 4 or number 5, do we see get into this Hall of Fame first? Both have the numbers. Jason Hansen retired as the third highest scoring player ever in the NFL, which says a lot. Still not in. Prater, obviously, has got the big leg bombs. Justin, while Russ is still looking, who do we see from a Lions perspective get into that Hall of Fame first?
So from our perspective of the 313, they're both Hall of Fame kickers because that's all we had. When you have nothing and you have a little bit of something, you're going to think that it's the best shit ever. From the NFL perspective, Prater might get it just based on frequency. If we keep leaning on him the way that we are and he keeps breaking all these records, he's having more of an opportunity to be the best tool that we have. He might get a look. I mean, I don't expect the NFL to do anything like that because they just value other positions. But if the frequency alone doesn't get you in, no one will ever get in. So I'd go with Prater first.
Okay.
I'll answer that question first. I think it ends up being Prater just because of his prolific success from distance. He's possibly the greatest 55-plus yard field goal kicker we've seen in the NFL. However, let's not forget that he's on pace for a career worst field goal percentage this year.
Yeah.
Dude's not playing as good as he used to, and he was cut from a team before having a similar dip. So ultimately, I don't think either of them make the Hall of Fame. We only got 4 kickers in the Hall of Fame to begin with. But Prater from distance has done some special things that I think would give him the edge.
Okay.
Jumping back to the other one, let him play. Sticky tack stuff.
Let him say, and I agree with that entirely. But that's the thing. Where the flag gets thrown, I can see it. I'm like, okay, that's fair. I get what you're doing there. I don't see the pass interference, and I think that late in a game like this, you have to eat the whistle. This has to be players deciding the outcome of the game. Now, if we stopped them or if they kick that field goal and we drive down and go to overtime and lose, then I think you see a lot more on the refs because that was a play that needed to be decided by the players. Refs need to not be stepping in where they don't need it. Make the obvious call when the obvious call is needed. I'm talking about Saints-Rams where the guy tackled them before the ball even was thrown by the quarterback.
Yeah, call that one.
Call that one. Maybe leave this one alone. So it's interesting. Jay, you mentioned that we were going to talk about him, so we'll get to him right now. Lions finally decide after weeks and weeks of everyone calling for it to sit down old man River, Adrian Peterson, for a little bit, not let him be the starter, and give DeAndre Swift the start he deserves. 16 carries, 81 yards, five yards a carry. What'd you see, Jay?
I saw a running back that actually decided to move laterally and find openings and pick up another 8 to 10 yards on a play, which is – that doesn't happen in Detroit. It's a welcome sign, but it's also an indictment on our running back system and Kerryon Johnson. It allows us to say, yeah, we took Swift this year, and we're going to use him now. So it's almost like next man up mentality, but like knowing that it's still all wrong. So I liked it. Out of everything that happened out of that game, that was something I was like, oh my God, he moved left and found a hole and got 7 more. That's excellent. AP ran a couple routes to the side and, got pushed out of bounds, and that was typical Lions right there for 3 yards averaging or whatever. So I'm okay with it, but it needs to be more of like an identity for them, not just something we dial up when we want to.
Well, just so you know, AP, 4 carries, 21 yards, actually had a better average, 5.3 yards a carry, but obviously.
Oh, okay.
Kerryon had an average of 3 because he carried the ball one time for 3 yards. But, which, like you said, that's a bigger thing. A year ago, Kerryon was the guy. There was no dispute about it. Now, Kerryon is an afterthought to an afterthought of an afterthought. Also, to add to that, Swift, second on the team in receiving yards, 5 receptions, 68 yards, 1 touchdown. So he's proved that he is that diverse, can use me both ways kind of back. But, Russ, to echo on Justin, we talked about it for the last couple of weeks, how Kerryon just appears to have disappeared. Is it finally time to accept that, all right, Lions missed here, Swift is now the guy, let's start building around that?
I agree with half of that. I agree it's time to start building the focus of this offense around Swift. I think it's too early to give up necessarily on Kerryon because he's one injury away from being a necessity, another focal point of this offense. And, geez, I mean, it's a running back. We can see that at any point. And he's only 2 years in the league. And they seem to trust him as a pass protection back. So I still think there's hope for him. There's a spot on the roster, not looking like he's worth that second round pick. But I think you're dead on. They need to start building around Swift. If nothing more than the 5.3 yards per carry you pointed out for AP, who knew an old tired guy would be better if you gave him fewer carries? How novel.
It's a lovely idea in theory. We don't do this very often, but before we make our predictions for this upcoming week, I do want to go to the other side. I want to talk about Washington for 1 minute. I would be, like, 3 years, we've learned nothing if not to give praise to the people that deserve praise. And in my opinion, praise is deserved of Alex Smith. This is a guy who, 2 years ago, it looked like he was a long shot to ever walk on two legs again, let alone be in a football game. Let alone go 38 of 55 for 390, nothing in the scoring column, but still, 55 passes, 390 yards out of a guy who everyone had written off. Washington had drafted their quarterback of the future in the time it took for him to come back. If you saw the broadcast, they announced it. He had to get special permission from the government to go to the hospital that he had to go to because his leg injury was that severe. That unless you were a veteran or a active member of the military, you did not go to this hospital. So, Russ, what does it say? I mean, not only about modern technology, and we can't really get into that because none of us are doctors, but what does it say and how amazing is it to see a guy like this who, no, we're not rooting for him on an everyday basis like Washington fans are, but you're still rooting for him. It's human nature to want to see this guy get back to where he was because he worked so hard after not being so great in San Francisco, to become something in Kansas City, and then move on to Washington.
Oh, it's fantastic to see. And, like, the mic'd-up version of Matt Stafford after the game showed all the elation that people who, I mean, someone who is directly competing against him has for someone to be able to do something like this. It's amazing. And, what, 10 years ago, his career's over and his life is significantly decreased?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Hey, we'll be able to strap on a bionic leg on him 10 years from now. Won't even miss a week.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I also think that Smith should probably get the, you should get some presents over to the secondary of the Lions. Maybe they got to get that Amazon wish list from that part of the field. Send them some gifts. Congratulate them. Say thank you for making me a better player that day. It's all jokes aside, it's awesome. Those are the kind of stories that I love to see. That's like the 30 for 30 documentary that will make me cry in like 3 years when I watch it. So I'm all about
it. Good call.
Well, there's already a 30 for 30 on him, and it does make you cry. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
What's the name of it? Because it better be a good pun. Something like getting off on the right foot.
I will look it up right now. Oh, come on. That's terrible.
Getting off on the wrong foot? I don't know.
Saying that. Project 11.
Footprints in the sand.
Project 11.
Project. Okay.
Number 11.
Yeah, well, I'm in for a good cry. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
So anyway, circling back, we're on to the next week. Detroit Lions to Carolina take on the 3-7 Carolina Panthers, a team that just cannot seem to get everything put together. They can't get all their talent on the field at once. It has been announced that Christian McCaffrey, the best player on their team, not going to play again this week. Even more to that, guys, Teddy Bridgewater, questionable to play this week. So you're looking at their backfield not being on the field. As of now, I don't know if they've updated this or anything, but as of now, Carolina is a 54% favorite to win this game. I don't see why, but hey, that's just me. There are ESPN hasn't updated yet. There is no spread. There is no nothing. So we're pretty much doing this one blind. Russ, I guess give me your predictions when you weigh in the fact that the best player on the world or the best player in that team is not playing this week, on top of the fact that their quarterback, who they went after to have for this team, is not potentially on the field this week.
I mean, they're kind of dead in the water. And it, the only thing that might save them is damn near everybody's questionable for this game. I don't think Stafford's gotten the questionable label yet, but he missed practice. But Galladay, Hockenson, Amendola, all questionable for the Lions. There is just barely, but there is about as many questionable pass catchers as we have, well, questionable pass catchers with 2.6 drops per game.
As of now, Stafford, Galladay, Hockenson, and Marvin Jones all listed as questionable, updated today.
He did get it. Okay. He got it. Yeah, he got it after I looked at it this morning then. Okay. It's kind of simple for me. If there's no Teddy, the Lions win. We already know McCaffrey's out. Alternatively, if Galladay gets to play, I'm saying the Lions win. Who knows if these things are going to be true, but that's enough scenarios right there for me to tip it just slightly in the Lions' favor. 27-26, it'll be another one that you'll say, hey, they won it, but man, was that ugly. 500, somehow.
So gross.
Get it done, I guess.
My bet is still alive. That's all I can say. My bet is still alive.
It's still alive for now. To hurt you, though, remember 2016? Lions started off 9-3. Stafford hurt his finger. Finished 9-7.
Oh, no, I know. I know what we're thumb. I know what we're angling for. Believe me, I get it. But all I care about are the next four games. After that, they can fall off a cliff for all I care. I'm just angling for the things that benefit me because there's no way this team gets through the NFC North with a chance at a playoff. It's just not going to happen.
No.
So anyway, Jay, not to jump over you. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I forgot about the bet. So like I would like need to have them lose.
Oh, by the way, we're not there yet, but I would like to point out, speaking of bets, Bryson did not drive number one, didn't drive anything apparently that week. He just seemed to look for the trees, like I've been saying for the last month.
Yeah, I'm a -3 on our running bets. This is fun times, folks. So my predictions for the Lions were solely based around McCaffrey, and you broke some news on me where I have to call an audible on today. I'm going to have to pick the Lions to win this game, which one, in fact, ruins my bet if they actually do win. I'm going to have the Lions go 31, Carolina 20. They still lost games with McCaffrey, and the three teams that McCaffrey played against were Las Vegas, Tampa, and Kansas City, and they lost those games. Our only claim to fame on stopping the run was Jacksonville when they only went 16 carries for 44 yards. If we don't have to deal with McCaffrey, and you know, if we're not given Teddy Bridgewater the Alex Smith treatment, and what else do you grab for Carolina and say, yeah, they're going to screw us? So I'll go Detroit 31, Carolina 20.
31-20, I like that. I am actually going to look at this as though everyone that says questionable next to, for us and for them, doesn't play. No Teddy Bridgewater, no Matt Stafford, no Kenny Galladay, Hockenson, Marvin. That's a big tear. But
who does that leave?
It leaves Swift. It leaves Cephas. It leaves Hall. And it leaves Jesse James. So there you have a experienced veteran tight end. So the passing attack doesn't really change from the tight end perspective. I would argue right now they use Hockenson a lot more, and there's a tremendous upside. Jesse James isn't going to be that far of a drop-off if you can use him the right way. He did pretty well in Pittsburgh for all those years with Ben Roethlisberger. But see, that's the thing. We've had Stafford sit down. We lost the game, but in that time, Chase didn't look terrible. He really didn't. He was able to throw for 100 yards. He played well. So, for me, it's the fact that two of their best players are not on the field. That's a big thing for them because without those two, without McCaffrey, they're dead in the water. I think Swift has proven he can run the ball. You have a quarterback who has been on the field enough times in the NFL that we're going to see a drop-off, but we're not going to see a dead-in-the-water drop-off. So I think there's going to be next to no offense in this game. I expect this to be a 17-14 game for the Detroit Lions.
Okay. ending up 5-5, which, like, how did 5-5 coming off the tongue? That's just like, thanks for my somewhat cooked cheese on my hamburger. There's a little bit of wrapper still left on it, but the corners are melting. Like, there's no, it hurts, man. It really hurts. I'm sorry.
I'm full, but I may vomit.
Yeah.
You know what doesn't come off the tongue any better than that, Jay?
What's that, buddy?
1-3 Michigan State Spartans.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Nope.
As we move over to college, listen, dude, this is a tough time for both of us. College football is not something we want. It's bad when we say the Lions are the football team that doesn't hurt as bad to talk about, because Michigan State and Michigan football, it shouldn't be football. Mm-hmm. Your Michigan State Spartans fall 24-0 to the Indiana Hoosiers, which, by the way, I'm putting it right now, I like this Indiana Hoosiers football team. They're going to make it tough in the Big Ten. They are. I get Ohio State is still there, and Ohio State is still Ohio State. This Indiana team and Michael Penix is just making it tough on people. They are a good football team. Penix goes 25-38 for 320, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. So your defense got to him a couple times. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On the other side, I didn't. Right, now this is where I have to admit. Like I said, I'm doing this on the fly today. I didn't see all of the Michigan State game. So, Rocky Lombardi, the 3-7 for 21 and 2 interceptions. Injury, or did he really just get the hook in place of Peyton Thorne?
Peyton Thorne was placed in from the hook and then decided to run QB draws like he was a fucking running back, which I do not understand. So, they pulled him, and they put Thorne in, and he was like, I would do anything to have a competent quarterback just stay in the pocket and not have blonde hair. Just sign me up. I don't care if I get emails every day to renew my subscription. It is maddening. So Lombardi comes out. Mind you, I'm sorry, I'm going to go off for a second. Lombardi throws 2 picks, and so does Penix. And Penix still destroyed Michigan State. They still put points on the board. That second touchdown by Indiana, that was the end of the game right there. That's when everyone was like, we're done. It was the most disgusting touchdown I've watched Michigan State give up in recent memory. So Lombardi coming out, great. Let's see what we had. Oh, great, a rushing quarterback. Stay your ass in the pocket and pass. So there's no need for a 60-second assault when all I'm doing is laughing. I've got nothing for this team.
Assault.
60 seconds of salt, everybody. I didn't even have to call for it. It was just there. Oh, I love it. By the way, Joe Milton's available if you want him, because Lord knows I don't. Russ and I texted about this during the Wisconsin game. I will take literally the guy who's quarterbacking one of the flag football teams in intramural league right now. It's that bad. It's horrible. Anyway, that answers a question, because I really didn't know. Peyton Thorne, 20 or 10 of 20, 110, no touchdowns, 1 interception. It scares me that you say he ran QB draws all day and only rushed for 25 yards on 8 carries. Because that means something didn't go right for you with those QB draws.
Yeah. That was a thing. I don't know what that was, but it was a thing.
It's a thing. Now, I wanted to, when I looked at your schedule the other day, Jay, I wanted to be like, well, here comes a ray of sunshine. Going up against Maryland. Maryland's 2-1, though. So I don't know if it's a ray. Yeah. I mean, they still have ugly, ugly, ugly-ass helmet and flag, but it's okay. We'll get past that. Maryland's a 66% favorite to win this one. The spread's only 6 points, so one touchdown. You guys are going to be there. Over-under's 54.5. Yet again, they don't believe there's such thing as defense in the Big Ten, or at least now with these two teams. Jay, I'll let you go first here. Maryland, MSU. I'm gonna give you a caveat. Decide to stick with it, and Thorne is your starting quarterback for that entire game.
That would be the dumbest shit ever if they did that. He's played one.
Is it that much better than Rocky Lombardi, though?
I mean, I would rather rock out of pocket. At least I know what I'm going to get. I don't want to see QB draws. I mean, Maryland is set up to destroy us. First of all, they got Tua's brother, which, God, that just gets me all hot and bothered. Their running back, Jake Funk, is 3 times better than our running back on our team. Like this, and the Terps defense is scoring more points than their offense right now on the year. So they have way too many abilities to beat us. It probably shouldn't matter who the quarterback is. Give me the Terps 27, State 14. We'll at least score two touchdowns. We scored 7 points over the last two games, which is bullshit. We'll at least get two TDs in this game.
Okay. Russ, because I want to hear your analysis, and for some odd reason, I've just kept you from not talking in this little segment. I'm going to fix that. I say the records are the score, 21-13, Maryland over MSU.
Oh, I think, what was that score for MSU?
For me?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be 21-13, Maryland.
Wow, I'm projecting MSU to get the most points out of any of us. 27-16, Maryland. Yes, like Jay said, the Spartans only have 7 points over the last 2 weeks. But the Maryland defense, not great at stopping the other team from scoring. They forced some turnovers, sure, but they're allowing 35.3 points per game. That's bad, but the offense brings the funk. Jake Funk, obviously. But that will be more than enough to get it done. That's why I've got 27-16. I don't like picking Maryland. But this might be one of the better Maryland teams we've seen in quite some time. Which says nothing.
Yeah, which says nothing about the Big Ten because it's just a cluster right now. Anyone could beat, in theory, anyone could beat anyone. We haven't seen that fully yet, but
except for Ohio State.
Moving over to the other side, as I said, Joe Milton more than available if anybody would like him. 9-19 for 98 yards and 2 interceptions this past Saturday against the Wisconsin Badgers. Wisconsin takes that one 49-11. Listen, this Graham Mertz, I had never heard of him. Heck of a quarterback. 12-22, 127, 2 touchdowns. Did everything he had to do to just keep the offense going. Not really anything super shiny, super flashy. Russ, I heard this rumor at some point, and I'm starting to not believe it, that apparently Michigan had some kind of stable of running backs, but we can't apparently get over 47 rushing yards if all of them run the ball.
Yes, I heard that rumor as well. The offensive line screwing it up for everybody. Yes, 4 new starters. I get it. I understand. However, this is reprehensible, what's happening here. It's disgusting to watch. Milton has to be a running quarterback because he's running for his life half of the time here. And it's I cannot believe how inept the run game is. The one thing with Harbaugh is, and I think he's proven to everyone that he's not the QB whisperer he was advertised.
Yep.
But the one thing his teams have always done well at Michigan is run the ball, and now they're completely inept at it. And I'm pointing most of the finger at the O-line because, hey, like Corum looked really good, and they look good in spurts. But it's just constant pressure going the other way, and you're not going to get anything done when you can't do what's supposed to be the backbone of your offense. It's frankly just bad to watch. Just like Milton's first pick, which, thanks, Eubanks, hit your hands and your face.
Well,
I'll
make the argument that the second one's even worse, because the second one, he literally just threw it right to a white jersey. Like, there was no other guy that you could say, oh, well, I see where he was looking. No, that ball would have hit the ground before it reached anyone else but that guy.
So the second one was 100% on Milton, and it was frustrating for that reason. The first one was frustrating because he actually made a good pass.
Yep.
And it's just like, what are you doing? It's too early in the game for this.
Well, what I love, too, is after the second one, they showed Gattis flipping out on the receiving core. And the reporter even said, Gattis is over there screaming at him, saying, that second pick is on you. And to her credit, my wife is a football fan. But if it's not Oklahoma, she doesn't give a shit. She even stood up and said, what the fuck are you talking about? The first one was on the receivers. The second one was on the quarterback. And I said, yeah, she may have just gotten her wording wrong. And it's like, no. That first one, it's on Eubanks. You either got to catch that or you got to punch that thing so hard into the ground, no one has a chance at it. Second one, listen, Milton, like you said, Milton was running for his life. But Milton still had time on that throw. If not the fact that Milton could have scrambled and he could have gotten a couple extra. I'm okay with you getting 3 or 4, sliding, bite the bullet there. We live to play another play, but you can't throw one perfectly into the hands of a guy that he can just walk it into the end zone. That can't happen on this team. Now, Russ, you said it. You and I discussed this about how Harbaugh just isn't the QB whisperer. So I have to ask you a hard question now. explain to me what it is that is keeping Joe Milton in that QB1 position at Michigan.
I think the dirty secret is there's no one else that's been developed to take it from him. But I want to give McNamara the benefit of the doubt that it was the rain, but the ball didn't look like it had any zip on it, and he was throwing at receiver's feet when he came into the game.
Yeah, I get it.
If he's option two, the blame's on Harbaugh. Granted, this is college. Recruit a quarterback. You've been here a while. Develop a quarterback. This is bad.
But see, I'll make the argument that, and it's kind of a two-headed argument here. One, my argument is I don't think it, like you said, there might not be a guy groomed to take over. I think it is just that. I think Harbaugh, in his tenure here, is very, very, very bad at developing a backup quarterback for if it doesn't work. Yes. Because go across the board. Wilton Spate didn't work. Peters was not ready to step in. The only one who really was ready to step in was for the few years when we had Shea. He kind of had McCaffrey ready to go just in case. But it really didn't play out that way. A lot of times you saw Milton get in late in games during blowouts and just, you know, we saw the arm strength. So I think a big point of that is that, yes, he does not do a great job preparing, but that's also a big red flag as a head coach because everybody needs to be ready. Because all it takes is one play, Milton snaps his leg in half. We don't get Milton the next week. And you can't make a free agent signing. You have what you have on this team. So McNamara, no matter what, he needs some start snaps just to see. But my second part of this argument, Russ, and again, this might sound a little novice, but I'm kind of speaking from the area of Sergeant Salty angry right now. Explain to me how it could be any worse than it already is if McNamara gets on the field.
Well, 2 weeks ago, Milton didn't have any interceptions.
But he has not, now, at any point in this game, has he ever shown that he is prepared and ready to be a Big Ten starting quarterback at Michigan and be able to do what Michigan, in theory, should be doing 5 years into Harbaugh, competing for Big Ten championships?
Minnesota, it appeared to be. That turned out to be an illusion.
Yeah.
And it was partially because, the run game was working.
Yep.
And there were several long runs that the defense had to adjust for, and it wasn't putting all of the offense's pressure on the quarterback's shoulders. And that's not what Milton's built for. That's not the plan, right? That's not what we should be asking him to do. And he's not prepared to do it. So in that sense, if we're going to continue to watch this Michigan offense go, hey, we're going to throw the ball a bunch, we're not going to be able to run, then yeah, try somebody else because Milton's not going to work. And zero is not less than zero, right? They're the same. And that's your winning percentage with this formula. But if they're actually trying to get back to what they were trying to do at the beginning and run the ball well and have that be your quote-unquote unpredictable speed and space thing, then Milton fits for that role. But that's my only silver lining there. Then again, this is the same head coach that doesn't understand how a headset works, apparently. Can we hire a coach that knows how a headset works? Did you see him wearing the underwear on top of his head mask?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He had a mask underneath, and then his headset, and then he had another one coming out like a plague doctor beak. Dude, what?
I told Aaron they need to just order him like one of those Bane masks that they can just build the thing into. So he's like, he's talking like this, and I think that'd be perfect. It would be great.
I think if you take the logic of how he's using a mask, I think there's just a big communication problem between him and his quarterbacks. Because I think he's literally being a quarterback whisperer, and he's just literally whispering to his quarterbacks, and that's the advice, like the method he's giving advice on how to be a quarterback, and no one can hear him because he's just whispering too much.
Hey, when the receiver's open, you gotta throw it to him. What, Jim? What's that? Hey, you gotta throw it.
Exactly.
Don't overthrow.
What are you talking about?
That's fresh insight, though. Yeah, if that's the case, it makes sense. All right, we want to do the predictions, and then I'm going to ask you guys to we're 4 weeks in, so we're halfway through. I'm going to ask you guys to do a little grading here for me. Real quick, it's true. Michigan Wolverines, Rutgers Scarlet Knights, both 1-3 teams. Michigan is a 63.5% favorite in this game. I have no spread or line for you. That's just so bad they don't even want to give us one.
10.5. 10.5.
10.5. Okay.
This is where we're at.
You got an
10.5 to who?
You got an over-under?
Michigan.
Is there an over-under, Jay, or no?
I didn't pull the over under, okay, but Michigan favored by 10.5.
Favored by 10.5. With this offense being as subpar as it is, I'm assuming that the run game doesn't come back to life. I'm assuming we see another 75-yard game from all our backs combined. Probably another 200, probably a 200-yard day from Milton. If Harbaugh is smart, if he really is any kind of QB whisperer, this is a week where you go in and you just say, simplify. Get this guy rolling out of the pocket. Give him out routes. Give him, you know, those crossing routes. Give him layer, like, you know, tiers to look at and just work the progression. 1, 2, 3. You don't see anything, tuck it, get the 3 yards. Throw it to the fullback. Ben Mason isn't great. He'll catch a ball and go for 4 or 5 yards. He's not a first contact, go down kind of guy. So it is that thing. He could fall for that, yeah. So for me, it's that. You got to simplify this offense. Just give them a chance to get some momentum going. It's something that we wanted him to do last year with Shea, and he was very, very, very stubborn to not do it. He just didn't want to simplify anything. This is a year to simplify. That being said, I think that 10 sounds just about right for me. I feel kind of comfortable with it. So I am going to say 24-14 Michigan Wolverines this week, Russ.
I hope that you're right. But first, why is this a night game?
I don't know.
Who is eating their dinner watching this game?
Oh, no. It's a night game, meaning they're going to play it so late at night, everybody will be in bed during it, and we'll just wake up and find out the score.
Yeah, probably better. I promise I'll be more upbeat the rest of the podcast, but I got one depressing game we got to play first. And it's, am I talking about Michigan or am I talking about Rutgers? started their season by winning their opener, then lost their next three with only a single one of those losses coming within 3 points or less. Lost to Indiana by 2 scores, averaged 26 points per game, average giving up 34 points per game. Trick question, that's both of them.
I was going to say Rutgers, but it does sound like both
so
of them.
So hot. Yeah.
Jesus, that's where we're at with Michigan football. I'm going to give the slight edge for Michigan because ultimately there are the pieces there. It's a jumbled jigsaw that's not fitting together yet, but the pieces are there. And the day I pick Michigan to lose Rutgers is the day I stop watching Michigan football. 24-20, I'll give them the win. I'm not going to feel great about it.
It's fair.
Well, to round us out, Maryland was competitive against Indy, OSU, and they beat Michigan State. A couple statements that Michigan cannot make. However, I'm also going to have U of M win this game 28-23. I think this is a week where good things need to happen. Both Michigan and Michigan State both can't lose to Maryland and Rutgers in the same weekend. They are the cesspit of the Big Ten in terms of teams, and we can't be flip-flopping that completely. So I'm giving Michigan the win, 28-23.
Did you just say cesspool?
I did say cesspool, yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm...
In years past, that's where Maryland and Rutgers normally are, and we're not allowing that to happen this year.
I wanted to make sure I heard the words right, that's all. Okay, so I put this in the rundown, gave you no reasoning behind it. I'm going to ask you to give me a grade. The state of Michigan quarterbacks, not just Michigan State. I'm talking about the three quarterbacks for the major sports in Michigan right now. Joe Milton, Rocky Lombardi, Matt Stafford. To give you some perspective, Joe Milton has thrown for 967 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He has a QB rating of 62.9. That's not very good. Rocky Lombardi, 890 yards, 6 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, has a QB rating of 51.4. Now, here's where we're grading all of them together, so you're going to probably have to throw a curve in there. Matt Stafford, 2,403 yards, 17 touchdowns to 7 interceptions, a QB rating of 66.2, good for 17th in the league. So QB rating not even in the top half of the league. Everything else. Russ, grading right now, do these guys graduate from college?
I said I promised I was going to be positive. You're testing me. You're not making it easy.
Just remember, Tommy Boy graduated college with a D+. I just want to put that out there.
Okay, so that's our that's our criteria. It has to be above an S, right? Yes.
Yep. This is pass or fail. This is pass or fail.
Because we're going to average this up. You failed two classes, but you got a solid B in the third. And the B, that was in a higher credit hour class, so it carries a little bit more. Because, hey, let's be honest, the NFL, the stakes are higher, right? Absolutely. There's more credits there. So, geez, yeah, a B, an F, and an F. Jesus. It averages out to about a D, we'll say. Jesus, is fuzzy math. It for lack of me wanting to think too hard about this pain. Yeah, I'll say they pass. Let's be positive. D.
Okay.
See, I'm going to give a similar grade, but this will be the last graduating class from Quarterback U because the district has decided to close their fucking doors. Stafford's coach, or teacher, rather, gets fired immediately. The other coaches get to stay for a little bit longer because everyone's a little too prideful, but the district closed down the school. So congratulations, last graduating class.
Okay. I'm kind of right there with you guys. Like, Milton and Rocky Lombardi would probably be academically ineligible to play sports if I was giving them their grades. Stafford has been as good as he can be with everything. He's dealing with a backfield where I don't think they even know what they want to do. He's dealing with his number one receiver for what feels like the sixth year in a row. He doesn't get his number one receiver for a full season. We just can't seem to keep him healthy on the field. He's dealing with an offensive line that's actually not terrible, but I think it's a lot of PTSD for Stafford that he just expects it to be bad, so he gets a little rushy with things. He's dealing with a defense that's terrible, so he's, as usual, in these positions where he has to ball out week in and week out, or this team has no chance. So that being said, a B is a very good grade and a very fair grade for this guy. Milton and Rocky Lombardi, they to me look exactly what they are. They're starting quarterbacks on teams who are in down years. These are bad teams. So granted, you're not going to see two Heisman Trophy candidate quarterbacks playing on teams that are this bad. So that's what we're getting. We're getting down years out of these guys. So Fs are fair. So yeah, they're going to pass, but it's going to be very, very close. And one of them might not be dressing for sports the following year in school, is my opinion here.
All together now, D's get degrees.
D's over here.
So below average.
That's what I'm looking at here, man. That's what I'm looking at. It is tough. It is very tough. Moving on. As sports kind of slow down and as they're this bad as they are, we obviously have the NBA draft coming up tonight, actually. Not going to really be able to cover it because this show will be posted by the time it happens. We'll obviously recap it through social media and whatnot. But, you know, no hockey right now. We just had the Masters, which we're going to cover. So golf's going to take a little bit of a dip for a little while. So we're really just kind of left with football and as it comes. So we're going to get back into best ofs. This particular best of, it's been sitting in the folder for a little while. Russ came up with it, and we like to save as many of these as we can so that we have them for the slow months. And this one just came along, and it really kind of got me thinking. Best set of players. So everyone, all four guys play for the four major teams. Best talent we had at one time in this city for the four teams. But they all had to be on the team at the same time. It's a little interesting, and I think it's going to create some great answers. For me, I it was weird, and I said this before the show. It puts you in the state of you can get three really good ones, but then you may feel like you're kind of compromising on one just to get the other three in. I think I found one where I don't have to compromise at all, and I get four guys who you could make the argument were the best players on their team at the time they were on this one. I'm going to go with 2004. That gets me Nick Lindstrom. That gets me Chauncey Billups. That gets me Pudge Rodriguez. And that gets me Jason Hansen.
Ooh, shout out number four.
Shout out number four. I said we were going to get him later on. And my reasoning's here. Obviously, Nick Lindstrom, greatest defenseman of all time. Chauncey Billups, I think, was way more instrumental in that title than people realize. Obviously the finals MVP, but made big shots late in the game, hence the nickname Mr. Big Shot, late in games to get them into those playoffs and then keep them in those playoffs. Had a half-quarter buzzer beater against the Nets just to force overtime in that game to keep it going. Big there. Pudge will always hold a special place in my heart because as a high schooler, I can remember going to Tigers games and sitting, you know, my mom's company had fairly good seats. So we were close. We weren't amazingly close. You guys have all been to the games with me at these seats. They were good. Well, for a summer, I decided that it was a smart idea to take Mark Rodriguez with me. And so every time Pudge would come up to bat, Pudge's last name is Rodriguez, obviously, Mark would stand up and at the top of his lungs scream in Spanish, "Pudge, tu eres mi papá," which means you are my father. And that was just a great memory for me. You knew it was coming every time. I don't know that Pudge ever acknowledged him for it, but that was the only Spanish Mark knew how to speak, and it was just great. It was a great memory. And then Jason Hansen is obviously a Hall of Fame, in my opinion, Hall of Fame player, one of the greatest lines of all time. But years ago, I was playing golf one afternoon before I had to come to work, and I keep catching up to these two guys. And at one of the holes, the I'm waiting on the tee, and the guy says, "If you don't mind playing with an old hacker and his son-in-law, you're more than welcome to join us." And I said, "Absolutely, that'd be great." So he comes up and says, "My name's Bob." I said, "Nice to meet you, Bob." And he goes, "This is my son-in-law, Jason." And I'm digging for a tee and a golf ball. But sure enough, I see a hand. I turn. I say, "Hi, I'm Eric. Nice to meet you." And I do a double take and realize it's Jason Hansen. Playing golf at Glen Oaks Golf Course, Jay, at 13 in Orchard Lake. Just playing golf with his father-in-law. And so we start playing, and we get to the turn. And I'm thinking, okay, that's it. I played with them. That's fantastic. A couple holes with them. That's awesome. And he goes, "Are you going to keep playing the back nine?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." He goes, "Well, we're going to run in and pay. Do you care if we keep playing with you?" And I said, "Absolutely. More than welcome." So I played the entire back nine with Jason Hansen. And at the end of it, I was trying to be cool. Just playing with him's enough. I don't need any more than that. And his father-in-law says, "Great playing with you." Jason says, "Great playing with you." And his father-in-law goes, "Jason, sign something for him. Like, come on, sign a card for him." And Jason Hansen goes, "Do you even want my autograph?" And I decided to be a sarcastic little shit. And I'm like, "No, I'm good. Yes, I would love your autograph. That'd be awesome." And he signed it. He said, "Eric, amazing playing golf with you. Hope to do it again one day." Sure enough, I did see him at a golf course about 3 weeks later, and he remembered who I was. So it's just that's cool. And not to mention, they were all very, very talented athletes in their own right, Jay.
Please tell me he was a shitty golfer, though.
He's an amazing golfer. He's a kicker. All they do is like, kick balls, and then they go play golf.
He got a 3 on every course. Oh, figure that out.
He's an amazing golfer. Hits the ball a mile.
That's excellent. I love the story. Glen Oaks is a great course. I love playing there because it's probably the easiest course for my terrible ass. But that's excellent. I do like the year you went with because I feel like you did more of a balanced approach. I think you did throw in like your own twist of a memory that sparks a player for you.
Yep.
I'm going to come 2 years south of you and go to 2002.
I can't wait to hear what Red Wing you picked off of this team.
So that is the genesis of the year I picked. I said, well, this is easy. I'm going to 02. I have a roster full of superstars. I can pick anything that I want. And from the people I passed, you will agree, I picked whatever I wanted. So we're going to save the Wings for last. But I named mine dominant and deranged because that's probably how you're going to feel by the end of this. We're going to start with the Tigers. We're going to kick off with deranged. The theme that you said, Eric, that you feel like you're going to give up something to get something. Well, here's the giving up. Brandon Inch, he seemed to be everyone's favorite in 2002, even though he hit 202 for the year. So because he was everyone's favorite, he was like the memory for people. There's my memory. Throw in Grand Slam Brandon Inch. He's a treat. Going over to the dominant side of things, I also picked a Jason Hansen. In 2002, we went 3-13. Jason Hansen had 2 walk-off field goals in that year, both of them in overtime, and the other one, he was the scoring play to win the game. So he won single-handedly the 3 games for the Lions that year that we went 3-13.
Okay.
Over to the Pistons, more dominant, Ben Wallace. He got Defensive Player of the Year that year. For the Pistons. So we're taking Ben in 02. And then to round things out with my Wings, this is probably the best goalie that has played for the Wings since 2002, and that would be Dominik Hasek. He went 41-15 with a 2.17 goals against. We have not seen the likes of that in between our pipes in a long time. And for that, I'm going with the O2 lineup there.
All right, so Dominik, Ben Wallace, Jason Hansen, and Brandon Inge.
Yeah,
one
you can
of
laugh
these
when
things
you say that last
is not
one.
Like the other.
Well, I gave it all up.
Listen, you
guys.
Can, like, you know what's great is you kind of put me in this perfect place of Brandon Inge we could take off the table. One, Hall of Famer wasn't even a question. Other two, guy we spoke about earlier should be in the Hall of Fame. And the third one, Ben Wallace, a guy that Russ and I spend hours and hours arguing all the time, should be in Hall of Fame. So I see where you're going. But, Russ, I don't think you could pick an any more blue-collar three to go with Dominik Hasek.
I don't know how we didn't see this coming, if I'm honest with you.
Because we
it's
gave him way too many
that
options.
Glenn Denning wasn't there.
Yeah, we gave him way too many options. There's too many years that he could delve into to find three people that no one else would have on their list, but then stick it with the great one of the greatest goalies of all time.
I will say, though, if you're talking about the year 2002, he perfectly encapsulated each of those teams' spirit. With the star-studded Wings, right, bringing in Hasek, right? Yeah. Big Ben, obviously, with the Pistons. The awful Tigers with Brandon Inge. And then the only thing of note, Jason Hansen from the Lions there. Yeah, it's, again, I don't know how we didn't see that one coming.
I tried to avoid it, that's how.
just a little twisty treat for you all, that's all. And by the way, Eric, when you said, I forgot how you said it already, but you were like, oh, this brings me to my next point. I thought for sure I was getting fired for saying it. So I'm glad it went into just analysis and not that I've been removed from the podcast.
Unfortunately, after 3 years, you have tenure and I can't fire you anymore. I've tried. Believe me, I've tried. You know what's impressive, though? You could have gone with Joey Harrington because that was his rookie year on the line. So we didn't know what we were getting into.
Being oblivious. The oblivious dominant in Durange then.
All right. I can't wait to see. We know he came up with this one, so you know his answers are absolutely calculated. Russ, your top four would be?
Oh, I went back quite a ways. But before I do, I think I figured out why Pudge wasn't answering Mark. It's because papa means potato in Spanish.
Yeah, that's fair.
So you are my potato is what he was screaming at the Hall of Fame catcher.
That's
good job.
That's fair. Well, he was probably pudgy because of the potatoes. That's a lot of starch.
That's fair. Potatoes are delicious. I get it. I'm actually going back to the year I was born for my four. 1989-90 season. I get four Hall of Famers, so I'm not compromising anywhere. I get Yzerman's highest point season at 155 points back in 89. I get Isaiah Thomas in his last 80-plus game season there. I get Barry Sanders in his rookie year where he made the Pro Bowl and wasn't All-Pro. And I get Alan Trammell, who wasn't an All-Star that year, but he was an All-Star in the year before and after. So still quality enough there, even though his career was starting to wind down. I'm going to take my four Hall of Famers and be pretty proud of the job I did here.
It's not bad. It really isn't
bad.
It's very good. This is where, and I get in an argument with my dad all the time, so I'm going to bring it on here and see how long I can survive. Three of those guys were Hall of Famers all on their own, Isaiah, Barry, and Steve. I still maintain, because of the 1-2 punch, that Trammell has a lot harder time being a Hall of Famer if Lou Whitaker is not 10 feet away from him for as long as he was.
Oh, I mean, they're hard to disentangle.
You can't take one away from the other.
I mean, I don't think it's a difficult argument, though, to say that of those four, Trammell was the least, or at least he was. How do I want to say this?
He was the hardest sell for a Hall of Famer.
I don't want to speak ill of Alan F. and Trammell.
Not at all.
But he's the least qualified of those four for the Hall of Fame. It'd be the easiest argument to try and exclude him. out of them. But my competition is Brandon Inge, so I think I'm doing okay.
Hey, you got to get past Pudge, man. You got to get past Pudge.
Dude, Pudge was, growing up, even when he was with Texas, my favorite player. I absolutely loved him. So I can't say anything poor about that decision. I liked it. I thought I could do better with the Lions than Hanson, which is really being nitpicky, and why I didn't pick him. But, yeah, it's...
I get it. It's an argument that can be made, and it's just, it's one of those ones where it is impossible to separate them because of the fact that they're so, like, their careers are so intertwined that they almost seem like you can't say Alan Trammell without saying Lou Whitaker and vice versa.
Right.
It's that same one, and I've always been curious, like, and we're going off a little topic here, I get this, but I've always been curious to see, because you two know this sport far better than I do. Far better. And both these guys were great in their career. I think it helped that they spent their entire career together. But if for some odd reason the draft had gone differently and they had gone separately, would one of the Sedin twins been better than the other?
Oh, God. That's a dirty question.
Ooh, I love this question.
You would.
There,
I mean, one was more favored in passing than...
But I get that. I'm just talking about the better career. That doesn't necessarily mean like top five scoring, assists, and all. I'm talking about like successful career, their games won, awards, trophies, all that. Stats obviously play a factor into it. Would one have been better if, say Henrik had stayed in Vancouver and Daniel had ended up, I don't know, let's say Daniel ends up in like New York. Just like they opposite ends of the world. They're in different places. Different, same time, different place.
I think they both end up still being productive NHL players. I don't think they both get to the 1,000-point mark like they did. Henrik was the center and more of a playmaker, right? So that's not as flashy of a skill set, but there's always a home for a playmaking center on a second line with somebody. Daniel scored more goals, but I want to say at first blush that his skill set's going to make him a star more likely. However, a lot of those goals came from that connection. Yep. And I don't know if he gets that same finishing ability. Do I have his shot percentage? His shooting percentage wasn't crazy on his career. It's sitting at 11%. That's slightly above average, but that's not a killer instinct as far as shooting. So that's probably a lot of opportunity-based scoring, and that's from that connection. So, yeah. Daniel probably takes a bigger hit, I guess.
But you see what I'm saying? Like they're so woven together that you almost have to go through every season and wonder,
Well,
50 assists come off of this. If you take those 50 assists away, how many of those 50 goals are there? You know what I mean? Like, it's very tough to figure out, Jay.
They had that Russ was saying, the connection. They had, like, this telepathy between each other as if they were, like, twins or something. It was a strange
thing. Something like that.
You pull them apart. No, like, you'd see videos of, like, them in warm-ups, and their body and their muscles are doing the same exact damn thing. Like, there's, like, no-look passes for days between the two of them. So I feel like if you're trying to do the whole Whitaker, Trammell, Sedin, They are birthed together. One's actually identical, and the other's not. But they're together. They're counterparts.
But what I'm saying is, I guess I probably asked it weirder. Their careers, yes, they're brothers, so it's something. But they're so intertwined that I say, like, you can't say one without the other in what they did. It's just they're so, like, they butt right up to each other perfectly that it's impossible that. It does bring up the question, was it just the fact that they were together that made them so good, or could one of these guys, in theory, have gone somewhere, anywhere you want them to go, and just been significantly better than the other?
Significantly better, I'll say no.
Okay.
I think you don't get the same career, but you still get a pretty good one. From each of them in different ways. They end up filling different roles. They're probably not headliners on their teams. Second fiddle type. third fiddle type, but it's still, I mean, it's still good. Might not be talking about Hall of Fame, though.
No.
Probably. Yeah, I'm in the same camp of no. I think the only place we're actually going to see this play out is going to be Belichick-Brady, when you actually get to peel two people off of each other and see how it plays out.
I think we're seeing how that plays out right now.
It
took Belichick about 7 weeks to decide he needed to actually tailor his offense toward the quarterback he has, not the quarterback he had. So, which, by the way, I think I would like to tell you right now, I think that Cam Newton Belichick marriage is going to end in the Hindenburg. I really do. Cam will not be able to keep his mouth quiet long enough to not piss Bill off to the point that they are going to kill each other before it's all said and done.
I am not convinced that this still isn't some elaborate ruse from Belichick to get high draft pick, get the favorable schedule for the next year, and just walk right back into the playoffs with a shiny new toy, because he's that kind of crazy mastermind.
Yeah, but see, I get that, but your theory states that Belichick is willing to do something he's never done before, and that's trust a young talent immediately.
That's
you
fair.
Have to earn your way in any aspect of the Bill Belichick system. There was no first-round draft pick wide receiver who day one was the focal point of the offense. It's never happened. Their best receiver for the last 10 years has been Julian Edelman, and Julian Edelman had to work his way onto the field past Wes Welker, past these guys, and to this day he still has to work at it. He can't walk in and be like, I'm Julian Edelman, I've got you Super Bowls. Even Gronk, had to work his way through other tight ends.
Not really, though. Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez was the guy. They loved Aaron Hernandez on those teams. Aaron Hernandez just loved killing people, so he didn't get to stay on those teams. It's mean, but it's
true.
Yeah,
I like playing football, but have you tried murder?
It's just it's that thing. It's a weird question. Aaron Hernandez doesn't do that. Gronk is still Gronk. Like, he's still an amazing talent. He's a generational talent. But I don't think Gronk is as big and becomes as big if Aaron Hernandez plays a full career in the NFL, because Belichick really was that he doesn't like to show favorites. So I just think that, yes, high draft pick. They draft Fields. They draft Zach Wilson. They draft Trevor Lawrence. They draft one of these guys. I don't think that Belichick is not a shiny new toy guy. If anything, Belichick is the guy that's going to say, all right, you're on our team. Sit down. You're going to watch this guy we drafted 3 years ago from Auburn be our starting quarterback for a year. We're going to suck, but you're going to learn. My personal opinion.
Well, then you got to get that quarterback to sit down at some point. You got to be bad to get draft high enough to get him. Maybe it's not next year. Maybe it's 3 years from now, like you're saying. But you got to be bad enough to draft him at some point.
But see, that's the thing. I don't think Belichick is that kind of guy. Belichick wants to, it's not a bad trait to have in the industry he's in. Belichick doesn't have no surrender. He fully has to go full tilt at all times. Even if it's, you know, peewee football, he has to always be going all the way. There is no slowdown for him. And I think he's got such blinders from the success, he doesn't realize when he doesn't have the tools to get back to the level he's at.
Just give Cam some time. Cam will flourish. He'll make you happy.
No, he won't. Moving over to the 2020 Masters. Jay, I don't know about you. I had a blast watching this. It was a real kind of like little refresher as golf season's ending. It's like, okay, we got like a month or two of no real good golf. They're all going to go down and be playing in Florida and the Bahamas and all that. And then we get through the winter and Masters starts up again. So to have this Masters in November, my only one complaint, it didn't feel like November in Augusta. It felt like April in Augusta. There was no color change. It was all the same as it usually was.
Yeah, I mean, there were some rogue trees that whatever species it was, it dropped its leaves before everyone else. But for the most part, your pines were pines, your greens were green. So there, I was hoping for like the illustrious like yellow and orange. And red. No, it was green. It was definitely green for Dustin Johnson, who took home $2 million. So good for him and his prize. But it was good. It wasn't what you probably closed your eyes and pictured.
No, I pictured, like, you know, it's weird, too. I pictured, like, fall in Michigan where every tree was 9 different colors at Augusta. And you're not going to get that in Georgia. It's just different. But, you know, right. Deep down, you kind of hope for it. You spoke of Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson finishes at 20 under for the 4 days. A little interesting to know. The lowest in relation to par anyone has ever finished at the Masters. 20 under for 4 days. No one else has ever done it. Kind of amazing. Cameron Smith and Sung J.M., who, by the way, Jay, you need to be paying attention to Sung J.M.'s swing. He's going to fix you. He really is. Both finished
good.
Finished in second, 5 back of Dustin. He had this running away, and it was great to see. But I told you this was going to happen, Jay, so you now have to sit here and live through it.
No.
You now have to admit, and this is not a one-year thing. I get that he's going to keep doing this, and he's going to keep coming back. But fans of Bryson and Bryson alone, you have to eat your medicine. You cannot walk onto Augusta, call it a par 68, meaning it's 2 shots easier than you really think it is, call it a par 68, and then go out there and put up a 7 on a hole, 2 holes in, and shoot the kind of days you did where you had one of the best stats I heard. Bryson bolsters about his driving distance. First day, Bryson averaged 360 yards off the tee. That's amazing. It's phenomenal. Larry Mize, a guy who is in his late 50s to early 60s, is done on the tour. He has nothing to do. He's won the Masters in the past, so therefore he gets to come back as long as he wants. That's one of the perks of the Masters. You win a green jacket, you can play there until you die if you want. Larry Mize averaged 250 yards off the tee. For perspective, that's how far I average off the tee. They both shot the same score on the first day. So this distance thing doesn't mean jack shit at Augusta if you can't make your putts, Jay.
I think it will when he perfects it. I mean, I will take my medicine. I was hoping to get all the electricity I wanted out of Bryson. That is Bryson. It wasn't there. But, you know, as soon as Monday came rolling around, he already sent out an Instagram picture that he's gearing up for 2021. He's taking months off. He's going to, you know, fix his craft, if you will. It's going to happen. It didn't happen this year, but Bryson, if I can take some, you know what, I'm probably pretty sure in the next month I can take this bet. If I can take a future bet on next year's Master winner, Bryson, I'll put some actual money on that. I have a great record of winning, but it didn't happen this past weekend. It was sad.
Boy, man, you said when he perfects it. That's all good and well, but that's like speaking that to any person. Like, hey, I'm really good at hitting the fastball. I can't hit a curveball, a slider, a changeup, or a knuckleball. But one day when I get good at it, I'll be great. Well, that's useless to me now. I can hit the ball.
The easy way out.
But I can hit the ball a country mile. That's great. But after we get off the tee box, I can't do anything. Well, that's great. Tell you what, give me your money now, and we just won't play the round because you're like, it's very rare that you're going to magically figure out how to do some of the toughest things it is to do on a golf course out of nowhere.
Yeah, Bryson played like shit. I'll say it.
He did.
It wasn't good.
But now I want to ask you guys this, and this, I mentioned this to Aaron the other day, and this just seems weird to me. Tiger got to have the Masters, got to be the holder of the green jacket for, I believe it was, what's April to November? So something like 17 months. He was the Masters champion. Shane Lowry will hold on to the claret jug for 2 years because they didn't have an open this year. The last time that happened was World War II. Dustin Johnson gets to be the Masters champion for 5 months. Like, if I'm DJ, you're looking at them going, what the fuck? We can't just push this back a little bit? You get to be, like, you reach the pinnacle of your career, Russ, and they say, oh, by the way, you get abbreviated season with this thing.
I don't think I would really care, because what was the first part of Masters champion for 5 months? Yeah. Masters champion.
Oh,
that's right. For the rest of his life, he's got that green jacket. Yeah, it sucks that it's abbreviated, but yeah, it sucks more that we're in a global pandemic. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for that being the crying point.
Well, I think it also doesn't hurt that the winner's share was $2 million. So
yeah, that'll be okay. He might sleep okay.
Yeah, it just means in 5 months he's got to go out and win it again, Jay.
But do you know who's, you know what he gets to be very happy about after 5 months,
oh,
still?
I don't want to hear this.
That
he, you bring up
Pauline, that he walked
Gretzky
off the green with his hand on Paulina's booty. She's a very tasteful lady. I'm pretty sure he's okay. Because she is okay. And she's related to the great one, who is also okay.
Could you imagine being the pressure? Just the pressure of being their child? That your bloodline is a Masters champion and, oh, the possibly the greatest hockey player to ever live? He's going
to
be an accountant, I guarantee you.
Yeah, but I'm going to be his therapist or her therapist, and I'm going to quit my job just to collect those hourly bills from that family, because that child might need some help.
Oh, God.
Big shoes.
You people are crazy. All right, moving on.
Eric, well, hang on. Eric, real quickly, though. Yeah. It is bullshit. All jokes aside, it is bullshit. It's for a very small moment of time. His parade, if you will, has been cut short, but I think he's got a lot of other positive things.
That's, and I understand that. I'm not trying to, I'm just saying it is that thing of like, it would crush me if like, I spend all this time to do this and then I go out and win the World Series or win the Super Bowl or win the British Open or the Masters. And, you know, this is a life of time and this is my year. No one gets this for a year. That's just how it's always been. That's, I get this trophy for a year. And then they go, oh, by the way, if you could have that back in 4 months, that'd be great. It's like, no, I get this for a year. Now, I get the Masters as a jacket. They like you. I mean, there is a trophy, but like you get that for the rest of your life. The claret jug, you have to give that back because it's actually like a legit artifact they've been using for so long. But they give you a replica of it, and that's all great. But, I mean, what's amazing thing is no one realizes the claret jug was not the original trophy. It used to be a belt. You won the Open Championship, you got a belt. But they put in the rules, if you ever won it 3 years in a row, you got to keep the belt forever. So I'm going to blank on his name now. Young Tom Morrison, who his father is allegedly the creator of golf and the man who founded founded St. Andrews. Young Tom Morrison won it 3 years in a row in his early 20s, so they had to come up with a new trophy, the claret jug. So it's just it's that thing. But just like I get that for a year. You want it? Come and get it. Like, I won this thing. That's the end of this.
So. And by belt, you do mean, like, a wrestling-style big gold belt and not, like, a strap of leather.
I mean, I've never – I don't know that I've ever actually seen the – like, I mean, again, this was in the, like, 1919s, so I don't really know. The Open Championship belt. If I remember correctly, it looks like a really cheap, like, Las Vegas wrestling – belt, if I remember correctly.
Fantastic.
The Open.
I bet he still wears it, though.
He died, like, 3 years after that, man.
Oof.
Young Tom Morrison died when he was, like, 27.
Wait, was he just young, or was his first name Young?
Well, no, I'm really father, stuck on his that father's name was Tom Morrison, too. So instead of, like...
Old Tom Morrison?
Instead of Junior, it was Old Tom Morrison and Young Tom Morrison. Because they had the same name. Here, I'll just do this.
We're using the Skype to our advantage here.
This was the belt.
Oh, man, that's just a fancy belt buckle.
Yeah, it's just...
I'd rock that.
Like, here's... there's actually a photo of him wearing it. So
look at that pocket watch.
That's what it was. It was just
a... That's a power move, man.
It was just a...
Put on that belt.
God. All right, moving on. We have plays of the week. We've been trying to get to these as we go. Jay, you know what? I like yours, so I want you to go first here. Hit me with the play of the week and the fun play of the week.
So, Russ, now we know what happens. If he actually likes your plays, you get to go first. So just keep that in mind when you pick your plays next.
Is that way
he likes mine first.
I guess Justin is going to go last now. Russ, hit me with your...
yeah!
Whoever wants to go ahead.
All right, I guess I will take the quick lead, even though I got a half-ass liking my picks here. My first one, I'm going with Juju Smith-Schuster. If you are a player of the Steelers right now, it almost feels like on Sunday for a couple hours, it's not 2020. So the fact that the Steelers are undefeated, Juju got to throw a touchdown ball to his parents, got to give it to his dad in the stand. That's just, you know what, like Russ said, you got to be a little bit positive. There's a good note right there. I will say something. That was fun. It felt great to watch. And it sounded like this.
All right, Jay, real quick. Steelers can finish undefeated.
No, Ben will be hurt soon.
Russ.
Hot take.
No. No one's going undefeated this year.
All right, fair enough. Jay, your fun play of the week.
So the fun play of the week, Lane Kiffin, looking like most fans watching their sports teams from home, minus the clipboard going 100 miles into the sky, he knew it was coming. Like, Lane Kiffin reacted like that was the only play he worked on for 7 days. And he's like, all right, as long as we accomplish this play, I'm the best coach ever. So like, he went one for one on play selection, and it sounded like this.
Watch the celebration by Lane Kiffin. Hands are already up. Ball is not even out of his quarterback's hands.
He starts at the 38. He loses the clipboard at the 47. And he sprints all the way down out of the headset to the 26 in a fist pump.
Lane Kiffin's a weird dude. I think that's all that we know. So I expect this from Lane Kiffin, and that's my funny play of the week.
There you go. Russ, over to you for your plays of the week.
All right, my funny play of the week, we'll throw it all the way over to Russia for this one, for one Yaroslav Askarov, usually the one shutting down some fancy stick work. This has been the best use of a goalie stick since the last person to hit Sean Avery in the knees with theirs. Opposing forward comes around the net. Askarov brings in the puck, looks like he's going to clear it. Nope, does a quick pirouette, spin move, shoots it back the other way. Goalie deking out a forward? Hell yeah.
Love it. All right, over to your actual play of the week.
My actual play of the week, thank God I got to this one first. It's the Hopkins Hail Mary catch, evoking images of Calvin in triple coverage. Calvin did it twice, though, so, hey, Nuke, you got some work to do. But it was the game winner, second left on the clock. Dagger like that gets my play of the week vote. Let's just listen.
7 seconds. 6 seconds. Murray heaves it downfield. It is. Oh, it's caught. It is caught. DeAndre Hopkins. Miraculous. It's Murray magic.
It's Murray magic.
Murray magic. Wild stat about that. He was wearing the Jumpman brand glove. They got over $5 million worth of exposure from that catch alone.
Wow.
Whoa.
Better thing, though, I would like to ask you, because I watched the post-game interview. One, he called himself as what it is when you have the ability to dunk, hops. But two, he broke down the play. What was better, the actual play itself or him saying they all made a good play on the ball, but it was a better catch by I?
I absolutely love the confidence of breakdown there. I'm still going to go with the play, but that is excellent.
I mean, he is the best receiver in the league. I've been saying it for a few years, Jay.
My favorite part of the play wasn't even mentioned. It was the fact that Kyler Murray was standing backwards to the play because he's so short, he had to watch it on the Jumbotron.
That's right. I forgot.
That's great. All right, moving over to my plays of the week. I stuck in Augusta, Georgia. Didn't go anywhere. Obviously, as we said, Dustin Johnson won the Masters. Think it's great. My funny play of the week is actually a tweet. Tiger Woods sent out, or at least his camp sent out, after winning. Tiger had to put the jacket on Dustin, was great about it. And Dustin, over the week doing interviews, was Augusta is known for its amazing sandwiches that they have in concession stands during the Masters. They were asked, Dustin was asked what his favorite one was, and he said, all of them. I liked them all. Well, if you win the Masters the following year, Wednesday night, you host the Champions Dinner. You pick the menu, whatever you want. Tiger this year went very, you know, sushi and seafood kind of thing. In past years, it's been, you know, steak and all that stuff. Well, Tiger decided to predict that next year's menu will be sandwiches because of Dustin Johnson's love for the Masters and Augusta sandwiches. So that's my little funny play of the week. I thought it was kind of funny. Finds a way to congratulate him, but still, Tiger Woods being Tiger gets his jab in there. Over to my actual play of the week. It had nothing to do with on the golf course. It was Dustin Johnson in his post-round interview with Amanda Balionis. And this is where you realize how much winning these majors and these tournaments means to these guys. Same as hockey players fight for the Stanley Cup. Football players want that Super Bowl. This is what it means to them to win the Masters. And this is DJ sounding, well, a little choked up.
It's a dream come true. It's, you know, it's, as a kid, you know, always dreamed about, you know, being a Masters champion.
It's okay.
It's hard to talk. I've got a great team who... Jesus. Who gives it? I can't even talk.
You know, Bubba Watson has shown us that tears are absolutely allowed here at Augusta National. Dustin, take this one.
And she said Bubba Watson, and I tweeted it out as soon as I saw this video. It is true. Bubba Watson, to me, has the greatest quote you can ever have after winning a championship of any kind. Doesn't matter if it's Super Bowl, team sport kind of thing, or an individual like this. Bubba Watson, when being interviewed after winning the Masters for the first time in 2012, said it perfectly when asked to describe his feelings. I never made it this far in my dreams. Everyone else, you think about winning. You think about hitting the game-winning shot to do what you did. You never think about having to talk about it and explain what it means to you. And so it's the truth. I never made it this far in my dreams. I think all of us, listen, we're talking about sports, so clearly it means something to us. All of us hit the game-winning shot to give the Pistons the title, or threw the game-winning touchdown, or made the goal in a shootout in the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals to win it, to win the cup for the Red Wings. We all had it, but I could promise you none of us ever got that far in our dreams of having to say what it means to be holding the Stanley Cup or to be holding the Super Bowl Lombardi Trophy. You never get that far in your dreams. So good on Dustin for getting that far in his dreams.
I got shivers, man. I was ending emotionally.
It'll do it to you. Believe me, I knew it was coming. As always, I want to thank everyone for listening. This has been a hell of a 3 years. We've had a blast doing this. The fact that it's been 3 years and we are all still, I'm going to say, happily married to our significant others is amazing, because this thing takes up a lot of time for us. We talk about it all day, every day, trying to come up with things. And that being said, look, it's 3 years. We're not done. We've got other segments we're looking to put out here eventually pretty soon. I think there's going to be something about The Rock and the People's Elbow coming up soon. I'm interested to see what we do there. Obviously, pay attention on Instagram. Justin posting every week some little clips here and there. Polls on Twitter. We'll try to get those up here in the next day or two. Look, it's been a fun 3 years, but it's been a very quick 3 years. Lord knows the next couple years are going to be just as fun, if not more. My thanks to Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
Hey, we're on TV in 3 years, so just like I said, pencil us in. And for the record, when I was a kid, my dreams weren't winning. My dreams were already fulfilled, yelling at referees and trying to fight someone on the ice. So this is exactly what my dreams were like.
Yeah, we got you to your dream. Yeah, we got you to your dream. And as always, Statman Russ Ivanek, I've been saying it for 3 years, going to say it for another 30, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are. Couldn't do this without you, buddy.
Oh, it is a blast every week. I'll say I have two goals every time we do this, every single week since we started this. It's use half of the stats that I come up with. It rarely happens. And the second one is to make you two laugh at some point. I hopefully do a little bit better with that one. The one thing I don't have to worry about is having a good time, because that happens every time, you guys. So thank you. Three more. Let's do it.
Yeah, three more. And as always, at least for another 3 years, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response, were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.